all your rest. I said, peace up north, peace down south, peace in the ghettos all round about. Jah call upon the youth, for they are strong, so don't you provoke and make them do wrong. We're all in a one, and a one in all, so throw away the grudge and the war all gone. Throw away the guns and the wars all gone. Throw away the hunger and the wars all gone. Throw away the complex and the wars all gone. Your idol and teach your little sister, and the same shall return to you, my brethren. Fight against no color, class, nor creed, for on discrimination does violence lead. Equal rights and justice for one and all, and with true liberty, freedom shall call. For peace in the east, peace in the west, your roots, your radical, and all your rest. I said, peace up north, peace down south, peace in the ghettos all round about.
Bravo!
Remember that reggae is the music which sends a message, tells of history, the truth, and the right. Just your past, the youth to make the food go round. But that's the only way to trample crime to the ground.
To comfort the afflicted and to keep them from wrong. Let the aged be protected and the infants be strong.
Please save your life and strength to trample the drug on y'all. When we reach in our whole amounts, I am love and respect your hygiene. Your little sister, and the same shall return to you, my brethren. We are all in a one, and a one in all. So throw away the grudge, and the war's all gone. Throw away the guns, and the war's all gone. Throw away the hunger, and the war's all gone.
Be in the cause of the innocent ones to comfort the afflicted and to keep them.
The food I make the food go round. But that's the only way to trample crime to the ground. Equal rights and justice for one and all, and with true liberty freedom shall call. Don't fight against no color, class, nor creed, for on discrimination does violence feed. We are all in a one, and a one in all. So throw away the weapons and the wars all gone.
You're radical, you're wrong.
And all the rest. I said, peace up north, peace down south, peace in the ghettos all round about. Peace in the east, west, north and south, peace in the ghettos all round about. Come on.
What's good, peoples? Welcome to another episode of the Peace and Social Justice Show. I'm Corey Hemp Hunt, reporting from occupied Machuta territory, and I'll be your host for the next 90 minutes. Before I get started, I'd like to salute and send my gratitude to Lindsey Briggs, my co-host Chris Nelson, Mr. Van Fleet, and everyone who participated in the protest earlier this week at City Council. Your works and efforts to address the abuse City Council is employing the police to execute on our neighbors without physical addresses is what causing good trouble looks like. Congressman Lewis would have been proud. Also, I must take a second to say rest in power to reggae legend Bunny Wailer. Bunny is commercially known for the infamous music group The Wailers, who in concert with Bob Marley helped bring global recognition to the reggae most are familiar with today. But I will remember Bunny Wailer most importantly as an inspiration to multiple generations of freedom fighters, educators, and oppressed people across the world. While his flesh has transitioned, his legacy continues to usher us towards the promised land. Much gratitude and one love. And as Brother Nipsey would say, the marathon continues. These days, there's so much to stress about in these times of social conflict, so it's important that we check in with ourselves and loved ones, especially around health issues. Take a moment to refill your heart, be present of the energy you're sharing, and why, while remaining aware of the impact our actions have on others, especially the least fortunate. Yet don't let the despair of the entire world, the country, or even the city get you down. Without you, there is no you helping us. So please, take care of you like you take care of us. On that note, I'd like to send a Saturn-sized bundle of love to those finding creative and effective ways of helping our community. From those creating educational spaces, opportunities, and materials outside the colonial norms, to those helping curate food, shelter, and clothing for those struggling or simply unable, to folks reading and listening and or writing and speaking on the subjugation of the most marginalized. You all are medicine in this toxic society. Take care of yourselves so you can continue to heal our collective. All my relations and many blessings. This episode of PSJ helps kick off the Spring Pledge Drive, so I hope you gain sapience and feel inspired to donate at KZFR to show your appreciation and do your part to keep this community venue available. This priceless platform has, among countless other things, allowed me to bring you the voices of some of our most passionate activists and educators, as well as some of the most marginalized humans from our community. For example, on this episode, I catch up with TEK curriculum creator, educator, organizer, and native activist Allie Mitters Knight to get an update on the activity at Verbena Fields, insight around local vandalization of native projects, and she educates listeners on CEQA and AB52. After this session, I stop by Stonewall Alliance of Chico to speak with Alyssa Larson, their events coordinator and co-coordinator of Stonewall's PR, communications, and center management. The passionate local organizer sat with me to educate our listeners to the facts around the struggles BIPOC LGBTQ folks face and speak to what Stonewall of Chico has to offer in general, but specifically during COVID, and how they are attempting to help folks stay connected while socially distanced during this pandemic. Then I conclude this episode of PSJ. I sat with the regional director of United Way, Melody Prepstall, who has a bachelor's degree in multicultural and gender studies and a master's in social work from Chico State. And she humbly discusses the importance of equity and what she and North State Equity Fund are doing to address the real barriers marginalized people face when attempting to access financial resources. Thank you for tuning in. Please share your thoughts and suggestions and donate what you can to this community resource that is 90.1 Chico at KZFR. Or call in at 601-340-KZFR. That's 601-340-5937. So we start this journey in Verbena Fields, where I spoke with Allie Mitters Knight, a local native mother, educator, organizer, and activist who took some time out to speak about her TEK program, educate us about CEQA, and inform us around the resistance and vandalism of some native projects. I hope you gain sapience from this session and enjoy.
Okay, so who am I speaking with?
Allie Mitters Knight. I am a member, tribal member of the Machupta Indian tribe here in occupied Machupta territory, also known as Chico, California.
Awesome. I thank you for your time, Allie. And we're standing here in Verbena Fields. Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about what you got going on out here?
Heck yeah. So Verbena Fields is a area in Chico, California, off of First East Avenue and Verbena Avenue. And this area was originally kind of a dump site. Construction workers and construction companies would often come in here and kind of dump their supplies in this area. And this was the old gravel mine. So this was the gravel and rocks were mined here to make all the roads and Highway 99 in this area. So this was pretty much mined, depleted, wrecked, and turned into a junkyard. And the future plans of this was either to be to clear it and turn it into development or do a park. So the park was made and invited Machupta tribal members like myself in for consultation and ended up getting into an agreement and now in an arrangement where I am doing interactive native plant work every Friday with the community, and we're also managing the plants but also being able to take and work with the seeds and everything here, which is unlike the relationship the community has with the Bidwell Park.
And I see you have some groups working with you. Who are these people?
So the groups, we have different groups out here. So one group we have is the CAVE program through Chico State University. So Chico State University students get to come out here and spend 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours with me. You have to work, learn about plants, learn about how they're managed and what season, and just the keystone species that the Machupta and local Konkal folks here really appreciate and have a great reverence for. So then we also have out here community members who have just showed up every Friday as just community members that want to do their part and to, in this area. So they come and meet with me. We cut back willow, we cut back grape, we cut back you know, invasive stuff, and we just manage what we can, and we just learn these skills together. And we also have just we will be having more family and have kids. So we did have PV students come out earlier this morning. And so we are making an arrangement, so I'll be working with two sets of students at PV for outdoor education out here.
Awesome. Yeah, so you guys are getting a lot of work done out here. It looks really good. So community members, if they want to get involved, how would they do that?
So it's really easy to get involved in the Verbena Fields Project because it's a 10-to-1 program out here, volunteer. So I show up, come rain or shine, for any reason. There's pretty much, if I'm not going to be here for some reason, there will be somebody here with instructions for a job.
Okay.
And I do come out here in the rain. Even when it's really bad rain, I even come out here. But nobody else has to if they don't want to. but I really have been doing this no matter what, no matter season, if it's hot, if it's cold, whatever. We put this timeline in, and we may be switching it a little earlier on Fridays as the heat starts to turn up in the summer.
Sure.
But we plan on being out here as much as possible in the summer and getting some of the gathering done that needs to be done in that season.
Awesome. And I was hearing you're having some issues with members around in the community. Would you like to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So one of the issues that started coming up was that in an area, and there was this time where we had tribal members who were going out to Bidwell Park and going to areas and having a hard time gathering materials, willow, cultural materials. And the park would always ask how much you're going to gather, what you're going to take. There's just a lot of bureaucracy involved. So it kind of just got dropped. No one really bothered with it. But when Verbena Fields came on, then I make it interactive. I'm actually collecting, working, and taking with willow. And trimming plants in the park. But when community members see a brown person in their park cutting materials down and dragging them, putting them in their car, that becomes a suspect to a lot of folks that don't understand what's going on. So in the history, local history recently, no one really has done land management without wearing a yellow vest and having a land management contract with the city. So for me to come out and do land management without a contract, but just based on stewardship and, you know, basically what I would call an outdoor education setting where we're interacting with the community, sharing these kiosks, not just posting a sign saying this is what about, but it's sending an actual person to show you and teach you. That seems to not settle well with some of the folks that are used to the old school method of writing a plan, sending it through an environmental review plan about exactly what you're going to do to every plant in the park, and then having that and do it, having someone inspect and approve everything you do. Unfortunately, a lot of folks in this area who make decisions about native plants are not cultural practitioners or tribal cultural practitioners. Mm-hmm. So their world viewpoint on plants is obscure and almost different than a tribal's. And that basically means I find things out here to eat, whereas some of the other folks who are native plant lovers will actually just admire it and try to preserve it, not knowing that the plant has a relationship with me and wants to be eaten by me.
Sure. Yeah, that's very, very important information. I appreciate you bringing it to our community. It's unfortunate that there's been a resistance to that. And I'm even hearing of vandalization going on. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, so I've dealt with vandalization for almost every project that I've worked on. Mm. From a mural, mm-hmm. I've got your land B-word written to me with swastikas. I think that guy got arrested for another one. I've had vandalization on the art out here in Verbena Fields, as well as some of the work we've done. Mm-hmm. And then when we worked on a BLM land 2 weeks ago out in Magalia, mm-hmm. That's a Bureau of Land Management land.
Yeah.
That land was... We've worked on it for a week, pulling invasives and kind of getting it all nice and clean. And then I think it was about four or five, I guess, teenagers or some folks up there stole all the tractors and ran them on a joyride on the property and stuck them in mud and just destroyed the property.
Just ignorance going amok, man. It's such a dangerous thing to be unaware. And that brings me to the issue of TEK. And I guess for listeners who are unfamiliar, what is TEK?
So TEK is a term, traditional ecological knowledge, that's used to pretty much describe the knowledge that tribal folks hold about their ecosystems locally, and that place-based knowledge. So I'm a Chupta, so I have TEK knowledge, which is traditional ecological knowledge of my place-based territory. Mm-hmm. And I am a master, what they call master practitioner, so I can help others and teach others what I know. Mm-hmm. So traditional ecological knowledge in other tribal territories will not look identical to the one in Machupta, even if we're very close, because everybody has got their unique sovereign way of approaching how they teach and manage their ecological resources.
Sure.
But just for the non-native community and for us all to communicate about the subject, we use the term traditional ecological knowledge.
Yes, and it's my understanding you've been working on that for about a decade or so, huh?
Yes. So I went to a program when I was in my young 30s in 2009, and that was a program for... basically, I wanted to do land management and teaching the traditional style, because I saw that there were land management, a lot of companies that were going out, and they didn't have knowledge of native plants. They didn't really have knowledge of how to tend to the land with that worldview and perspective of traditional ecological knowledge. Instead, you know, and I wonder how they got certified to work on lawns and work into the parks. And so that got me into wanting to get them to be certified into what I know, and having the tribe train people to work in our territory rather than these other agencies training folks to work in our territory that have no clue how to really do it correctly or efficiently.
Yeah, the colonial versus the native. There's a term you say often that I have taken to heart, which is decolonize your mind.
Yes.
And I feel like TEK is putting your actions where your mouth is, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. So traditional ecological knowledge and kind of teaching this way of having a big, you know, certification, people kind of coming into the territory and getting acquainted with what our plants are. I really felt like we had gotten way more... We got way more questions than we got answers at the beginning of the trek. Mm. There was more problems with folks wanting to know how much blood degree I had, really getting into the racial qualifications and really racializing the Native knowledge in this place. And so saying it's based on race. And so those types of assumptions have gotten me into some really interesting but needed debates with folks, especially non-Native folks that have just been programmed in their mind to always have to racially profile everything done by a person of color.
Mm. This is Corey Hemp Hunt on the Peace and Social Justice Show, speaking with Ali Mitters Knight, a local activist, educator, and organizer. The Peace and Social Justice Show is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries, and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op, open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. And by Chico Velo, supporting bicycling, education, and advocacy since 1980, Chico Velo encourages you to ride your bicycle and park it safely at their bike valet when available at the Thursday Night Market and Saturday Farmers Market. For more information, visit ChicoVelo.org and find them on Facebook. I'm honored and blessed to utilize the platform KZFR 90.1 has established over the last 30 years. It's my goal to bring voices of activists, educators, and also uplift the marginalized voices in a fashion that fosters the growth of our community. You help keep this resource available by donating what you can. With all the constant issues popping up, it would be impossible to keep this community resource operating without the support of our listeners. Know you are appreciated by all the creative neighbors that make up the volunteer programming staff here at KZFR. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy the loving labor put into the vast spectrum of programming, from PSJ, that's Peace and Social Justice, to the devastation sounds, to That's Just Jazz. There's truly something for most. So, as we hop back into this amazing informative session with Ali Mitters Knight, please take a moment and go to KZFR.org today and pledge, or call 601-340-KZFR. That's 601-340-5937. Tell them PSJ sent you.
So I guess that brings me to CEQA and your thoughts on that, and AB 52.
So basically, CEQA is a really important environmental regulating policy that allows and needs to have consultation, like kind of like what I was saying earlier about when you have a land management plan and you need it to go through certain things so that it passes the lint test of whether it's good for the people or bad for the people, or good for the earth or bad for the earth. Mm-hmm. So typically CEQA looks at projects like, let's just say, oil drilling, fracking on a piece of land. Mm-hmm. The issue would be that the drilling would have to go through an environmental review to see if it would be healthy or not. And so experts are called in from the area onto what certain things. So CEQA would be reviewing to make sure that all of the checks were made and all the I's were dotted.
Uh-huh.
But it's mostly more to ensure that these processes go through adequate review. Doesn't always mean that the result is that we're going to get a healthy and great project.
Sure.
But that the project itself passes all these lens. Reviews has to be tribal consultation.
Mm-hmm.
So that would lulls us into, there's two policies of state that roll into tribal consultation. So the first one is SB 18.
Okay.
And that one is old. You know what I mean? That's kind of like 70s type of, old school shit. It's not you can use it, but it's only for planning projects and it's for the very end.
Okay.
So it's kind of one of those tricky ones where you're like, you can use SB 18 to ruin somebody's day and edit their whole program after they've spent 2 or 7 years on it and tell them that it's not good enough.
Mm.
So SB 18 is kind of a harsh one that people don't like tribes to get involved with because it's very friction. It makes a lot of friction. The new one is AB 52, and that's Assembly Bill 52, and that one's seven years old. So it's okay. relatively new. And what this one is you have to consult from the beginning. Mm-hmm. You can't start a project in my Machupta territory under where you need to have CEQA review. There are some conditions and not go through a consultation. Mm-hmm. And usually a consultation would imagine people with archaeological stuff. So they're looking at, oh, well, do I have Indian bones in my yard? Or is there this rock is just a pedal, you know, old, you know, kitchen utensils, usually like, you know, grinding rocks and, mm-hmm. and whatnot. So those things are usually what people believe that they're consulting on. And they're not really realizing that's the intellectual tribe's property to know traditional ecological knowledge. Mm-hmm. We have a plethora of information about the place. And we have a plethora of information about how to do it, what to do, and, you know, and what time to do it. Mm-hmm. And so these types of consultations, when this kind of information, and if we do assessments of what native plants are on the area and what isn't, that's actually valuable. People really want to know that stuff. So that's actually a little bit more fresher, nicer, probably more, you're going to see a lot more collaboration and partnerships come from that type of a bill than you would from the first one. Mm-hmm. But, of course, SB 18 and AB 52 are relatively new to folks to do tribal consultation. And even agencies that know they have to do CEQA compliance and they know they have to do environmental reviews and do consultations, they do their best to avoid consultation with tribes.
As we're closing up here, is there anything else you want to get out to the people that you think our listeners should know?
You know, I think it's really important when you have tribal property, or you're living in Butte County, when you're living in this area, you're in somebody's tribal territory.
Yeah.
There is not anywhere you can go, especially in the state of California, where you're not in someone's tribal territory. Mm-hmm. And that tribal territory, that those plants in that area have a language that they've been called for a long time. So there are things that are really important to look at as far as how your mind's eye views the native plants and the nature that you see around you here today, that this intimate relationship with the community and plants needs to be really re-sparked. Mm. And you know, for this place to be famously known for almonds or almonds when that is not a native plant to this place is it just speaks to the stupidity and ignorance of a colonized mind.
Yes.
And I will speak directly to that stupid, you know, colonized mind and say, please get educated, get learned, know where you are in space and time so that you can communicate with the humans around you better. Mm. And I don't really get frustrated so much with what's said. I get frustrated with what's not done on the land.
And as we always do at the end of Sapient Sessions, this being your second time, you're my first second time guest.
Yay!
Apropos. So at the end, we always do give my guests an opportunity to ask our listeners to ask themselves three questions they think are productive and give them a favorite quote.
Yeah. So one is... have you learned a name of a plant today?
Fire. Great question.
One other question is, what's your favorite smelling plant? And third of all, what plant can you put around you in the ground that you can come back to and visit and become a friend of yours? And one of my quotes would be, let's see, I've done some quotes on my other one that I was like, what? I have a funny one that comes up. I guess I'm going to do comedy then.
Great.
Can't save your ass and your face at the same time. That's my favorite quote. So,
would you like to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, so saving your face is kind of like saving your reputation, what people think of you. Saving your ass is like saving your life. Mm. Saving... you know, your money, your bank account, you know, like your goodwill. Mm-hmm. And you really can't do both at the same time for the most part. Mm-hmm. So when you're in a situation, probably best sometimes you got to lose your ass to save your face, and sometimes you got to save your face to lose your ass. And that's just the way it goes. But typically you can't have the best of both worlds and be able to say what you want and not pay the price.
Mm.
And so that goes for everybody. That goes for me. That goes for anybody. So I like to remind myself that when I open my mouth and say something, I can't save my ass and my face at the same time. So I might lose my ass on this one, but it's okay.
Hey, we appreciate you. We appreciate you. A note one more time. Where can community members and listeners go to kind of stay up to date with TEK and what you got going on?
So there's a website, TEKChico.org.
Okay.
And we're going to be putting up, there's going to be a lot coming up. I'm in March, mm-hmm. I will be contracted with the Machupta tribe to design a TEK program, and I'll be working that all year. Mm-hmm. So with that year program on the website, you're going to have a lot of stuff pop off and show up and more programs. So I just can't wait to work with the teachers in the area that like to do outdoor classrooms and meet with them and kind of use this place during this COVID transition time for a very safe classroom with a lot of education.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Allie, and blessings for your works.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Allie Mitters-Knight for her priceless works. And if you would like to stay up to date or volunteer with the program, the TEK program, visit TEKChico.org. That's TEKChico.org. Coming up next is an educational opportunity with Stonewall of Chico's events, PR, and communications coordinator, Alyssa Larson. In this session, we discuss the need for connection and how Stonewall is attempting to address it, as well as opportunities for community support. As I continue to grow in this journey of exchange and exposure, I hope to custodian a space where marginalized peoples feel heard, seen, safe, and cared for. In my opinion, these spaces are critical for humanity as a whole. A main obstacle for our collective conscious connection, in my opinion, obviously, is a lack of physical understanding and a power tool, in essence, in the germination of this understanding is communication and the ability for us to just hear from folks that we don't normally interact with, folks not from our background and not from our area, and from communities that maybe we just don't feel safe around each other, you know. And with this opportunity that Chris Nelson has given me to sit in on these peace and social justice shows, I'm able to bring you some of these conversations where I speak to folks that maybe you weren't able to meet in your life regularly, and organizations that you may have not heard of otherwise. And I find that to be a priceless resource. And this station is in desperate need of its listeners and those of us in our community that benefit from it to invest and keep it going. So this is the time where we ask you, the listener of listener supported radio KZFR 90.1 Chico, to go on over to KZFR.org and pledge, you know, donate, let them know that Peace and Social Justice sent you. And if you're not internet savvy, you can call 601-340-5927. That's 601-340-KZFR. And just if you got it, give us a hand to keep giving this information and keep this wonderful station that has so many wonderful programmers, you know, your neighbors, basically all of us, giving us all an opportunity to share our gifts with you. And one of my gifts is curating music of a political nature and an empowering nature. And so I love to just, you know, toss one or two of those into my shows to kind of give us a respite from the talking and the learning. And for this week's episode, I found a track by Rhapsody, and it's a melody of two songs, actually. One, Nina, and the other, 12 Problems. So it's self-explanatory. I hope you all just listen to the lyrics. Very important and powerful stuff. This is listener supported KZFR community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.
Let's get into this first one, dedicated to one special one from my home state of North Carolina that I entitled Nina. So let's rock with it. 7 feet. Barren strange fruit. Check, check, 1, 2. Blood on the leaves. and blood at the root.
And blood at the root.
So bleed, 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 so bleed, so bleed.
Emit light, rap, or emit chill. I drew a line without showing my body, that's a skill. Bad to the bone and the grill. You be dead wrong if looks kill. I'm still on my spiel in the spirit of El Hill. I own a Sparrow, nose like a Pharaoh's. Our bloodline trill for the young and all the lils. We all gon' get meals. Talk a lot of game, but we get paid to like Jamil. Was raised upon a hill, the valley's a sunken place. I'm just trying to build like I came with some kettle weight. Know I'm a God MC, cause homie, I made the devil wait. Well, I brought hell, you ain't gotta tell me I'm hella great. I don't speak on it nowadays, I just meditate. Y'all can have the bars, homie, I spit hard metal gates. Henry Louis Gates when I caught me some new estate. Make room for myself, I'm in a way different middle place. I keep it real, all y'all look anime. I'm fine like anime, black don't crack like Angela. Black and brave like in the A. It don't come with apologies, let's just tip in some andre. When you greet me, it's namaste. Spread love the Brooklyn way or like marmalade. No matter if you street street or more like the promenade. We gotta come together like the corn and the dookie braids. For the present and future days, I'll say what I gotta say. I am Nina and Roberta, the one you love but ain't heard of. Got my middle finger up like Pac after attempted murder. Failed to kill me, it's still me. Woke up singing Shirley Murdoch as we lay these edges down. Brown women, we so perfect. Went from field to still being cropped out the picture. But we all know who got the juice, my sisters. Imitating us in all the Hollywood pictures. And still they never be us. Yo, I'm from the backwoods where Nina Woods sing about the life we should lead. A new dawn, another deed, I try to do some good. I felt more damned than Mississippi was. They denied Nina in Philadelphia, and still we persevered like all the 400 years of our own blood, Africa. Old Panthers looking back like, who gonna come up after us? Outside the movies, to make sure before it move you, it move me. Now bow down to the queen, please. Make sure you bow down and show and respect the black woman. One love to Nina Simone. Shouts to North Carolina all day. So how you feeling back there, baby? That's how we gonna start it off, just to get the move. One of my favorite quotes from Nina Simone was, it's an artist's duty to speak and reflect the truth. So our truth is just how fly we are. I'm gonna just keep it real, and I'm gonna tell them like it's supposed to be told. But I got one more joint I want to do. Is that cool with y'all?
Thought them 99 problems was war on drugs, legality, they got us on fallacies, resorting in casualties. I was supposed to resort in the Maldives now. We in the rallies now, boxing the IG now, boxing the IG in the memory. Point Hennessy and bump, boom, shot, reaching for the ID. Get on my neck and bless your Cuban link. I think like the Cubans think, you never get a starter back. Got your back, Team Mallory. Carry on like a Prada bag. Dogs with me like they caught a lab in the backseat of a patrol car. That's luck, they ain't called a coroner. Should be Hall of Fame corridor. The way we run it back. You think it's 63? I think it's 63s. 180 degrees. Get your shit straight. Mr. Police do the same thing. The coaches do the same thing. The Raheem do the same thing. In our reality, I got 99 problems and 12 still to fix. I got 99 problems. Killers of Breonna Taylor are still free, vacationing. They have not been fired. They have not been charged. They have not been arrested. They have not been convicted. Therefore, the work is not done. The work cannot afford to be done. The work will never be done because black lives have to matter. For women, for men, for our trans brothers and sisters. We have to be the revolution. I am Rhapsody. This is Mama's Boys Band. Peace out.
Brooklyn MC representing Rhapsody. Whew. Nina and 12 Problems. Check out her album Eve and just her whole catalog. Such a phenomenal MC. And without further ado, we'll get into the second Sapient session with the events coordinator of Stonewall, Chico.
Hi, my name is Alyssa Larson. I am the events, etc. coordinator for Stonewall Alliance of Chico.
Thank you so much for your time, Alyssa. I guess we could start by, if you could just give me, maybe give our listeners a brief background of what Stonewall is and maybe what drew you to this organization.
Yeah, Stonewall is Chico's LGBTQ nonprofit center. So we provide a variety of low to no cost services for the LGBTQ community and its allies. I got involved at Stonewall actually about 5 years ago. I was fresh out of college, and I wanted to do something that both made a difference in the community and was tied into the community, and that felt like a safe, good, comfortable place to be. And I'm really, really pleased to say that this is that place.
Awesome. We appreciate the works that you do. And during this pandemic, a group that is largely just not thought about it and spoken of enough, in my opinion, is the trans community. And so we're really appreciative for what Stonewall is doing, and I was just wondering maybe if you could inform us what you guys are doing since the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, just like all social services hopefully all counties in California, the pandemic really changed what we were able to do and how we were able to provide services. But we were creative, and we figured out ways to offer most of our services either online or, by appointment only with masks and things like that. We are able to still offer our groups. We've got like social support groups for lots of different demographics. We do low to no cost counseling. We do like a teen game night and a movie night, events, trainings, cultural competency trainings for all different kinds of groups. And all that stuff is being offered online. And then we've moved some of our services, like our free HIV and hepatitis C testing, our one-on-one advocacy and referrals, help finding competent medical care, legal help, stuff like that is all by appointment and done over the phone.
And so people wanting to get in contact with you guys, they would go, is there like a website?
StonewallChico.com or StonewallChico.org. We have both, and we're trying to switch it back to .org, but right now everything is stuck on .com. It's a complicated thing. But if you go to either one of those, search Stonewall Chico. All of our services are there. You can email us. You can do some of the stuff is right there, like links to the things that you need. You can find phone numbers and really... we are all working remotely or individually right now, but anytime you reach out to us in whatever capacity, within a few days, someone here will find it and get back to you.
And is this a nonprofit?
Yes. Yeah, and we are a 501c3 nonprofit.
Mm-hmm. Can listeners support, and how would they go about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be very helpful. A lot of our revenue that we normally make from things like Chico Pride and stuff like that obviously isn't coming in right now. So. Mm-hmm. There are donation options, buttons on our website that is really helpful if people want to do that. If folks just want to write a check, they can do that too. They can contact us and get that to us. But there are, you can donate right there on our website. Also, if you are interested, if you're a business or an organization and you want to be involved in something like that, we are taking sponsors for our events. They're just online events, so we aren't making a lot of money at them, but we're still able to reach the whole community. Sure. So it's a good deal for sponsors. We're taking Pride sponsors right now. You can also find all of that on our website, StonewallChico.com.
Awesome. And a major issue here in town is the unhoused abuse that's going on and the police pushing these encampments and sweeping them around just inhumanely and continuously affecting those people. And so I was wondering if there's things that Stonewall
can do and is doing to affect the unhoused trans community.
Absolutely. And this is a major issue for us and for our community. We know that, I just got some statistics here, nearly a third of all trans people will have experienced homelessness at some point in their lives. 42% of trans people of color have experienced homelessness at some point in their lives. So we're talking about a half of all people who identify as trans and people of color will experience homelessness. 1 in 12 trans youth get kicked out of their houses because of their gender identity when they come out. And that number jumps to about half when you have trans youth of color will experience some form of family rejection that forcibly removes them from their housing. And we're talking about that's just youth. We've also, like, people don't necessarily have to be forcibly removed from their house in order for them to need to leave. We know that about a half of all trans people will experience some kind of sexual assault in their home, in their life. So there's lots of reasons that people in our community end up without a home, without a roof over their heads. And a lot of those reasons, you know, this is just in-home statistics. This isn't even counting how many people are discriminated against at work and can't get a job. All kinds of other reasons that our community is really always affected by homelessness. And in right now, with the pandemic, with lack of housing, et cetera, et cetera, folks are just really, folks are out there on their own. Stonewall knows this. Really, unfortunately, we don't have the ability to house anyone. We have a small nonprofit community center. We don't have space. We don't have that kind of funding. But what we did see is that there is an opportunity for some work in the, in working with care providers who do provide housing. When people who are LGBTQ or trans identified try to access housing services, about 70% of them report harassment, physical assault, sexual assault, or being kicked out or denied services when they try to access shelters. More than a quarter of trans people who were interviewed in a 2015 survey said that they would avoid trying to get into a housing shelter because of the fear of how they would be treated. And the numbers back up that they're not wrong. You know, these are completely founded fears. And so, in Butte County, we have been working on, we call it our 5-point plan for creating safe, supportive housing services for trans, Black, Indigenous people of color, or BIPOC. And this is the first known countywide working committee of its kind. It includes basically 5 aspects to try to work with local housing service providers to make our shelters and other homeless services more accessible and safer for people who are in our LGBTQ community, and particularly people who are in the LGBTQ community and identify as people of color, which is just, if you can provide services for them, then probably most people can access. So that includes a working group, a training and policy review for all of the major local shelter providers. So we're working with, like, the Jesus Center, Safe Space, all of the local major housing service providers to try and work on their policies, their structures, their, you know, everything to do, train their staff to figure out how to better serve the whole community, because it's really, these services are not accessible to a lot of people. We're working toward creating a house and shelter specifically for LGBTQ people and folks of color, so that they are able to have kind of a safe haven from, unfortunately, other shelter guests, which can often be a lot of source of unsafe living situation for people. We are working on a coordinated entry system for folks of color and folks who are LGBTQ trying to access homeless services. Basically, so that somebody who's coming, who identifies that way and who is coming in to the system has a few people in different places whose job it is sort of to help them access and help them get past a lot of barriers that often exist. And then, of course, we started our QTPOC Direct Aid and Leadership Fund, which is just money donated from the community and that we've gotten through grants and things like that, that is literally just emergency aid, direct funds that go to individuals who identify as LGBTQ and people of color, who are in need of funds for very basic things that otherwise they do not have any other way to access. So,
and listeners can donate to that on the website?
Yes, also definitely on the website, yeah. Yeah, if you go to our website, stonewallchico.com, up at the top there is a little drop-down menu that says donate. It's got, you could donate to our center, and you can donate to the QTPOC Fund. You can do all of the kinds of money stuff that you'd want to do there. And that is really how that stays open. We're planning at the end of next month to have another fundraiser like we had last summer, where people can come and buy t-shirts that we're printing and stuff that will go to help fund that as well.
This is Corey Hunt, and I'm speaking with Alyssa Larson, the Events and Communications Coordinator of Stonewall Chico, on KZFR, Peace and Social Justice Show. The Peace and Social Justice Show is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local, seasonal, and organic offerings at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts. They have vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open 7 days a week for to-go lunch and dinner orders. Find Farm Star Pizza at 2359 The Esplanade, at farmstarpizza.com, and on Facebook. The phone number to order is 343-2056. And by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, family owned, operated, and argued over since 1980, reminding listeners to think for themselves, but drink with others. Only here on KZFR could you hear such, you know, important information from such intricate foundations, such vibrant, passionate activists giving you such important, educating, nutrient-rich information, you know. So if you could just go to KZFR.org and pledge what you can today, you know, or call 601-340-KZFR. That's 601-340-5937. And as we try to imagine these new structures and systems outside of this oppressive society that we've inherited, a key component to that, while we're still living in this capitalistic society, is investment. And so this is a perfect opportunity to invest in a system and structure that is completely community driven, with volunteers such as myself. You know, we spend hours creating these programs for just investigating different things to share with you, and seeking out these people and editing, producing, so on and so forth. So I hope you all find it in your heart to support this process, you know, support this structure and this system. So if you could go over to KZFR.org today and pledge, or call 601-340-KZFR. That's 601-340-5937. And now we jump back into the Sapient session with Alyssa Larson from Stonewall Chico.
And you kind of brushed on an idea that I see often, which is just reform of our systems, and understanding that, you know, the racism and homophobia and sexism isn't just isolated to a police department, but also in our social services and such. And what I feel, or have noticed to be a really powerful combatant to that issue, instead of just trying to reform these programs and these structures, but or while we do that, also establishing and building our community resources, like what you guys are doing with that QPOC fund. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering, staying connected to a community is so important and has become a lot harder to do in the past year. And as a community center, how is Stonewall connecting people or giving them the opportunity to do so?
That's a great point. Working from a kind of working from the outside in terms of working for, you know, working on systems and institutions can get you halfway. But yeah, you have to work from the inside out too. So people have to have actual connection and a feeling of belonging to something and a feeling of agency in their own lives and stuff.
Yes.
And that's hard. It is hard to create programs for that to begin with, because, you know, how do you help people feel connected just using programs? It's hard. But with the pandemic, we have had to move most of our social and support groups online, which is a little bit harder for some people to access. We still have people coming, which is good. But we are looking forward to when we can have folks meet in person again. That is a special thing. As I mentioned in the beginning, we have like some teen game nights and we have some online movie nights and stuff like that, that we're really trying to help people feel like they're belonging to something. But we've got a couple of events coming up. One next month. So, all throughout the month of March, we're having what we're calling Trans Month. Usually at this time of the year, we have Trans Week, which is, usually is a series of professional trainings that we give to people in the medical profession, educators, folks like that, to help them learn how to better serve the trans community. We just did that back in October. It had gotten pushed forward because of COVID and ended up being in the fall instead of the spring. So rather than doing that all over again a few months after we last did it, we decided to... and specifically for this reason of like feeling this need in the community of having a sense of connection and a sense of belonging, to skip the professional trainings this year and just have a month of events for the trans community to be together, to celebrate, to, you know, educate, to have a voice and some visibility. And so we're having... basically one or two events every week for the next month. Most of them are going to be online, but we have things we've got a trans identified cartoonist who's going to be doing a workshop on basically turning your own life experiences and difficult moments and interesting things and bizarre happenings into 4-panel comics, which can be a really interesting and useful creative outlet. We've got workshops on changing the tone and pitch of your voice to match your identity, your expression better. Mm. We've got workshops on legally changing your name, things like that. And so we're going to be, all of that stuff is going to be coming out on our website and on our social media. You can also sign up for our monthly newsletter, which will have that all listed on it. All of the sign up is on our website at the bottom of the page. And then at the end of Trans Month, at the end of March, as I mentioned, we're going to have a big parking lot event out here in the Stonewall Chico parking lot, which is on the corner of 6th Street and Orient Street. And we're going to have trans-identified artists, DJs, you know, people who make food and coffee and stuff like that coming out, so we can kind of showcase. We're trying to be as COVID-safe as possible, have everybody stay with their masks on and stay far away from each other as much as possible. But it does feel important to have some kind of a gathering where people can, you know, see each other, appreciate each other.
Especially in these marginalized groups, for sure.
Yeah. Yes. Very, very much so. And then we will be, Pedal Press is kind enough to be printing some t-shirts and some patches. We did a similar thing last year, if folks remember. We have a hand-drawn logo that Scout, our local wonderful musician and artist mm-hmm. designed. I pointed, he's not up there.
I thought you were pointing to the artwork.
Our t-shirts are in those boxes. So in my head, they're right there. So we'll be live printing those and selling those. And so people can come support both individual trans makers and artists and can contribute to that fund, which goes directly to our trans services. So that's next month. That's March, is going to be Trans Month. We just decided an entire month of events to celebrate and give visibility and give connection to the trans community. And then in June this year, we're going to be doing Chico Pride. And we're gonna try a lot of the things we tried last year, which is a lot of more COVID-safe versions of our traditional Pride stuff. Of course, we don't know what the safety landscape will look like yet in June. We're hoping that we can have some more in-person stuff. We know at least we will be doing a drive-in movie.
Awesome.
So that's fun. Other than that, we'll see what we're able to do in person. But we've come up with some pretty interesting things to keep people feeling connected during Pride. So, we are constantly trying to maintain the community part of being a community center. And I also want to say, if people want to start something, want to see something done, are feeling like, you know, they have an idea or they have a prompt or something that would be great for us to try doing, please bring it to us. We are completely open to new ideas and always trying to learn more from our community what they need to feel connected and to feel supported and what resources are important. So again, you can find us on our website. We've got an email there. We've got a phone number there. Reach out any way you'd like.
Thank you so much, Alyssa, and thank you to Stonewall for all you do. Is there anything else about the organization that you think we should know?
I will say, actually, we are about to bring on a new executive director.
Okay.
We've been operating without an executive director for some time. We're very fortunate to have a wonderful, tight-knit staff and board of directors here. So we've been sort of operating on a completely democratic and very small scale basis. And we are about to have a real live executive director, which will make us a little bit more efficient, hopefully. Sure. I think we just sent out an announcement about it on social media, so I don't think there's anything preventing me from saying it's Andrea Mox, if anybody knows who that is. She's a wonderful person in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And so as she comes on, we will be structuring new things, building new things. We'll start to have more capacity. And so even more of sort of what I just said about, like, you know, bring concerns, ideas, et cetera, to us. This is a great opportunity to get involved, to pitch new ideas, to, you know, see what Stonewall can do for the community that we haven't been doing, because we've got new leadership coming in, which is really cool.
Congratulations to Stonewall and Andrea Mox, the new executive director starting March 8th. Thanks so much to Alyssa Larson from Stonewall. Chico, give me her time. And if you're enjoying this show, you can head over to kzfr.org and tip the Peace and Social Justice Show. Every little bit helps. As we always do, we ended this sapient session with three questions and a proverb. And here is Alyssa's response.
The three questions that I have are actually three questions I've started asking myself every morning. I've started a daily journaling practice. And these are, I actually asked myself six questions, but I think these are kind of condensed into three. Here's how I would phrase them. And I feel like it's a really good way to start the day understanding what needs to happen in it and how to see it. So the first question is, what am I grateful for today? And then just to sit with What am I thankful for? What am I grateful for having today? The second question is, what do I need today? And I try to keep these very specific to the day itself. If you get too big, it gets too big. But what am I grateful for today? What do I need today? And the third is, what can I offer today? And so those three things, what do I have, what do I need, and what can I offer, help me really put each day into perspective.
Thank you. That's great. I like that.
Yeah.
I need that. For real.
It's wonderful. And then the quote that I've chosen is from Audre Lorde. She said, "We do the best we can until we know better, and then we do better."
Yes, indeed. A favorite line. For Black History, I was reading a lot of Audre. It's so interesting that so many of her sayings have led my life, and I didn't even realize that where they came from. So I'm like, oh, that's where I got that. That's where I got that. Like the one, I've been saying this since my teenage years about how you can't dismantle the master's home with the master's tools only.
Yes.
You know, and that's one that keeps coming back.
That it kicks me in the right place when I get too hyper focused on something, or, you know, why can't I figure out the answer to this problem, or what's wrong with, you know, why are we bashing our heads against this wall again? And coming back to something like that is so helpful to remember and to reevaluate, like, what is the nature of the problem we're dealing with here, and is there a better way to look at it? Yeah.
Seeing sapient citizens such as yourself doing the work is also very medicinal, so I appreciate you doing the work. I appreciate your time coming on and speaking and informing our listeners, and appreciate everyone at Stonewall for doing the priceless work of creating community for some of the most marginalized in this town.
Thank you so much, Corey. This is what a wonderful thing to be able to be part of, and to be able to convey what we're doing to the community listening to this. I have a lot of faith and a lot of trust in whoever's listening to this just by virtue of who's telling it.
Thank you so much, Alyssa, and keep up the great works.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you so much again to Alyssa Larson and the whole staff at Stonewall Chico for creating, you know, connection and opportunities for some of the most marginalized of our town. Coming up, I'll be having a final sapient session with Melody Prepstool, the regional director of United Way. But first, a commercial break.
90.1 KZFR. In the past few months, we've faced a challenge with electrical blackouts, some caused by natural conditions, some planned for safety, but everything affecting our ability to broadcast. We've begun a campaign to remedy the situation with a new downtown generator and electrical storage system, allowing our signal to go uninterrupted, delivering the programming and safety information you've come to rely on. Your donations this spring will help keep KZFR on the air when the power goes out. Visit kzfr.org to donate, and thank you for your continued dedication in keeping us growing and creating a sustainable community. 90.1 KZFR.
As we come to the conclusion of this episode of the Peace and Social Justice Show, I have one more sapient session as I sat with Melody Prepstool, the regional director of United Way, and we spoke about the NSEF, North State Equity Fund, which is, you know, in my opinion, the, you know, modern day version of the closest thing we can get to reparations at this point. You know, they've got H.R. 40 sitting out there and talking about doing studies. But folks like Melody are out here, you know, getting these grants for folks the most marginalized in our community, and creating that equity in real time. And so it was an honor for me to sit with her in this sapient session. I hope you all gain sapience from this session and enjoy.
And who am I speaking with?
My name is Melody Prepstool. I'm the regional director and chief advocacy officer for United Way of Northern California.
I saw you on the Dr. King Memorial they were having, And I saw that you were doing some loans and some very powerful things. Would you like to speak to that?
I'd love to talk about it. Yeah, it's a grant program that we're doing. And it's called the North State Equity Fund.
Mm-hmm.
We started it last year in the wake of George Floyd's murder.
Mm-hmm.
And the intention is to really kind of try to address racial justice issues here in our own communities. United Way of Northern California covers 9 counties, so basically like Butte County up to the Oregon border, except for the coast. And so we essentially looking at, you know, variety of different rural communities and wanting to figure out how we can support the work that's already happening here.
That's awesome. I'm so appreciative. And so you mentioned the North State Equity Fund. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit more about what that is?
Well, it was started as a collaboration between United Way and a couple community foundations, the North Valley Community Foundation here in Chico and the Community Foundation of the North State. And the idea, like I was saying, is essentially to provide resources to people who are kind of, you know, doing the work but don't necessarily have access to financial support, or maybe they do but they don't have, you know, the applying for grants is a lot of work.
Oh yeah.
And so trying to make the grants accessible to people that maybe wouldn't otherwise have time to invest in grant applications.
Yeah, that's so important. I can attest that just the word grant in itself can be, you know, very, very daunting and just turn off a lot of people mentally.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm grateful for you all doing that work. And have you guys been able to allocate any funds yet?
We did last summer. Initially, we really wanted to get some money out right away.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did 6 grants of $3,500.
Okay.
And those went to the African American Family and Cultural Center.
Oh.
The Hmong Cultural Center of Butte County.
Mm-hmm.
Stonewall Alliance for their trans QPOC fund, assistance fund.
Mm-hmm.
Latino Outreach of Tehama County. Native Roots Network, which is up in Shasta County, and SCAR, which is Shasta County Citizens Advocating for Respect.
Okay. Awesome. And is there a way for listeners that are interested and feel that they might be able to utilize your services to get in contact, or what should they do?
Well, so right now what we did those grants, those mini grants last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have just now gone through the process of identifying grantees for our next round.
Okay.
And that's a total of $70,000. So between those two rounds of grants,
mm-hmm.
all of the money that we so far have set aside for the fund has been committed.
Utilized. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So my next step really is finding foundations and funders that will help contribute to the fund so that I can continue putting grants out to people. So I would imagine that it'll be at least 6 to 9 months before we're able to put out another call for letters of interest,
mm-hmm.
because it will take me some time to find those funders and get the donations in.
Okay. And so you mentioned that you're in the process of, I guess, seeking more donors. So what's the goal, I guess, will be of the fund?
The goal is to essentially get funds to help support people who are doing really, you know, important grassroots work to address racial justice issues in our communities. And so, you know, recognizing that not everyone has the capacity to apply for grants, especially, you know, if you want something that's sustainable. I would love to be able to ultimately do grants that are like multiple year grants that are really an investment in organizations. But it's going to be a process for us to kind of build up our capacity and essentially like our that people see us as a reliable source.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they can see that, okay, this is who they have given money to.
And this is what they've done.
This is what they're doing. So I want to contribute to that. So that's going to be, I think, the biggest piece right now is, because the fund is so new,
mm-hmm.
being able to kind of establish that reputation.
Indeed. That's why I'm glad to have you on. And hopefully our listeners are catching the good works that you all are doing. When we were speaking of setting this up, you mentioned equity in disaster, and I wanted to ask you the relationship between disaster and equity.
Great, thank you. Yes, I started with United Way after the campfire, and it has been a journey for me. I'd never had any experience with disaster work in the past, and as I got involved and more involved here in the community, I've come to see the ways that the systems that are set up formally, especially, kind of like at the federal level and then the state level, they're intended to get funds out to community members, but they don't necessarily take into account like some of the challenges for individuals that have less traditional kinds of lifestyles, I suppose, so like people who were couch surfing, people who had informal housing agreements, like those people inevitably have a lot more work to do just to even verify that they lived in the disaster zone. Mm-hmm. And then just, there's people that have access to resources generally are the ones that know how to access more resources.
Yeah.
And so being able to kind of be mindful of who is accessing resources and who is not accessing those, and how do we get the resources to people that don't know how to navigate the systems.
So important. Yeah, that understanting of a rising tide does not lift all boats, in a
Absolutely.
Lot of cases, and so we got to focus on those people who are marginalized and needing of humanity and humanitarian efforts. So I appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, one of the things that was pointed out to me recently that I think is really important is that these systems were developed primarily by middle-class white people.
Mm.
And so they're developed to meet the needs of middle-class white people.
Mm-hmm.
And, because a lot of times the upper-class folks don't necessarily need the resources as much, but because the systems are focused on the needs of middle-class white folks, then we're not getting those marginalized community members who are not necessarily following the same life patterns as the middle class white Americans. So just being able to have some awareness and step away and look at that, kind of like, what is the privilege here in the situation, and how can I use my privilege to help people that don't have access to these same kinds of resources.
Very, very important. And I'm always appreciative of folks who aren't as marginalized, who are doing the work. And so I was interested in what kind of drove you to this calling.
That's a great question. My undergraduate degree is in multicultural and gender studies.
Mm-hmm.
And so certainly a lot of that foundational education was huge for me. I was an exchange student in high school, and I went to Jamaica.
Okay.
And to see what poverty looked like in Jamaica in comparison to what poverty looked like in my small town in Washington State, like, was really eye-opening for me. And so that's, I think, one of the things that really pushed me to kind of go, wait, this is, this world is not equal.
Balanced,
there's so
yeah.
much here to be done. And so my, ever since, back at the age of 16, I have really been looking at and trying to figure out, what is the role of my race? What is the role of my class? How do these things put me in the situation where I am now, and how can I use them for supporting people who don't have the same kinds of access as I do?
Very interesting. I have, they say woke, the term woke. And it gets bad and good things. And, I just use the terminology just from coming out of a lack of understanding,
Absolutely.
That beginning of coming out of a lack of understanding. And I became woke very late, it may be late 20s,
mm-hmm.
early 30s type. And so it's very interesting when I see individuals who are like in their early 20s, just very passionate and informed and doing the work. It's medicinal. And I heard you say that you were 16 when you kind of had an awakening of sorts. What do you think sparked that?
The experience of living in Jamaica was just so eye-opening.
That was when you were 16?
I was 16. Oh,
okay.
I turned 16
okay.
when I was there, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. The expectations, particularly the expectations of what it means to be a white person in Jamaica was so, like, in my face. And that really made me kind of look at, like, How did I get to this place where people assume that? I mean, I had people propose to me because they thought that getting married to a white person mm-hmm. was going to get them to a better place.
Uh-huh.
And so what is it about my skin that actually makes somebody feel like that is the route to go to propose to somebody that you don't even know? Like, you know, so the importance really of looking at how is my situation so much different from this person's situation, and how do I make myself be available, you know, at the same level, and see what are the dynamics that are at play there. So, of course, when I was 16, that wasn't that woke. I didn't have that perspective so much as just looking at things and thinking, this is not fair, and I'm not okay with the fact that I have, and I didn't have the word privilege at that point either.
Sure.
But, you know, I was not okay with the fact that I had privilege that other people didn't have access to. And, you know, it was a good 10-year process. It's
sure.
not something that just kind of happened for uh-huh. me. Growing up in a small community, you know, I was very blind in a lot of ways, but just gradually, you know, taking classes and engaging in community and listening to people, and it's brought me a long ways, but it was definitely a journey.
And for other white folks out there that are maybe early in their journey of wokeness, the word has gotten so, you know, polarizing,
I know, right?
or whatever. But, you know, just that idea, the people who are starting, you know, with maybe they were shocked out of their privilege bubble by George Floyd or something mm-hmm. like that. So they're mm-hmm. kind of newer into this understanding. Do you have any suggestions or ideas you think would be valuable for those people?
You know, I think the most important thing is listening
mm.
and doing your research. You know, like, the things that are available now are, you know, what was available when I was 16 was books and encyclopedias and magazines. We didn't have the internet. And now you can go and you can find podcasts and listen to what people are talking about
yes.
and hear about their experiences and go out to the community and talk to people and make friends and just, you know, listen with an open heart. So often, you know, people with privilege on a variety of different levels get stuck in the defensiveness of like, but that's not my fault. I didn't do that.
Mm.
And you have to be able to move past that, which is that I think that was one of the hardest parts of the, you know, finding what is my responsibility, because I spent so much time feeling guilty about being white.
Sure.
Which didn't get me anywhere, you mm. know, feel bad and I can't necessarily help myself or anyone else.
So, sure.
When I finally kind of came around the corner to see that, yes, privilege is a burden per se, but the burden of it is that then you can look at how does this benefit me and how can I use it to help somebody that doesn't have that same privilege. And that's the piece that is really helpful for me is, so, you know, and privilege is such a loaded word too, just like woke. I think of it as, you know, things I don't have to think about.
Mm.
So, you know, when I drive down the street here in Chico, I don't have to worry about getting pulled over by a police officer because I'm a white female, and I'll tell you, you know, multiple times, not necessarily here in Chico, but multiple times in my life, I've been pulled over and just, you know, oh, well, be more careful,
mm.
you know, and I'm very aware now that that experience is different from experiences of other people. So just being able to listen to other people's experiences and put it in the context of my own life and think about how can I then, you know, what can I do to support people who are driving while black? You know, what can I do to address that social or the justice system that sees things, you know, differently depending on the color of the person in front of them and the neighborhood that they're driving through? Or, you know, like, and I certainly still don't have all the answers, but
sure.
it gives me an opportunity to think about what is it that I'm doing and what can I be doing?
And I think that's the most important part, you know, because obviously we need the action, but before there can be any action, there has to be thought, and action without thought isn't sustainable or efficient. So
mm-hmm.
I appreciate you saying that, and I appreciate your works with NSF. And is there anything else about NSF you think our listeners should know?
Well, you know, one of the goals with the Equity Fund is to ultimately be able to really get the funds in the hands of people that, you know, are like the real grassroots organizations. Not
yes.
to say that the nonprofits that we're working with now aren't, you know, grassroots, but that I know that there's a lot of organizations and groups that I don't have access to because I'm not part of the communities. And I want those people to know that I'm trying to work my way towards them
mm-hmm.
and to getting funds available to them and supporting the important work that they do. And that, you know, people see that they're doing important work. I just don't necessarily have all of the tools and networking to be able to reach them at this point, but that's my goal, is to really be able to get funds into the hands of people that are doing important work that don't have access to support, financial support.
And so people who want to help you maybe allocate funds, or not allocate, but gather, you know, and, mm-hmm. and get, gain resources, where should they go?
They can go to our website, which is norcalunitedway.org.
Okay.
And then click on our work, and equity comes up on that link. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you would access the information, and you can choose to donate to the North State Equity Fund.
Awesome. And I know you said that you guys just finished allocating the resources that you have now, so there'll be a while before you're able to reallocate again. But folks that are interested in just being in line and kind of connecting with you, they would go to that same site, or how
yeah,
would they
or following us on Facebook. That's
okay.
Where,
yeah.
That's probably the easiest way. I mean, we send out news releases and that sort of thing, but it hasn't gotten a lot of traction yet.
Sure, yeah.
So,
that's what we're hoping to gather
yeah.
here. And so the Facebook, what is this Facebook page exactly?
The Facebook is NorCal United Way. So Facebook.com, NorCal United Way.
Okay.
And we have a great social media team that has been posting information, you know, on a regular mm-hmm. basis. And actually, a lot of posts in the month of March will be dedicated to the new grantees from this next round of funds.
Awesome.
So you'll be able to learn about the organizations we are funding and what they're doing.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm excited to be able to highlight their important work for sure.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I'm looking forward to it as well. I thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely.
This is Coriano on KZFR, the Peace and Social Justice Show, and I'm speaking with Melody Prepstall, the regional director at United Way, about the North State Equity Fund. And we ended up getting into a conversation around privilege, where she brings up some very powerful points. A beautiful conversation you could hear only here on the Peace and Social Justice Show. The Peace and Social Justice Show is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Quicksilver Courier Service. Established in 2010, Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Quicksilver provides courier service for private individuals as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality 24/7 delivery service, and by Knockout Collision Repair, Chico's high tech auto body shop, specializing in complete collision repair and restoration. Knockout Collision offers while you wait estimates, and they even handle all the insurance paperwork. For an appointment or information, call Knockout Collision Repair at 899-9202 or visit knockoutcollisionrepair.com. Before we get into Melody's three questions and a proverb, I'm going to make my final case for you going to KZFR.org and making a pledge, or calling 601-340-KZFR. That's 601-340-5937. And it's what you get, you know, what you're investing in. So by going to KZFR.org and pledging today, you're supporting the emergency generator that helps keep KZFR on during electrical storms or whenever PG&E just decides to shut off the power. And that helps us keep these sounds coming out to you all. You know, you get your CNR fix. You get to start your week with Native Song. You know, jazz heads get Just for Jazz. And, you know, you got Caribbean Dance with DJ PHG, and you got Ecotopia, Bohemian Express. You know, you can get your, see if Mercury's in retrograde and how that's going to affect you with Cosmic Kev. You got Funky Reservations. You got local news of all sorts. You got, you got international news. You got the Peace and Social Justice Show with conversations like I just had with Melody Prepstall, and I'm going to continue here after this. Me pleading for you to support local listener radio here at KZFR in Chico, California, and these wonderful people here working at this station. Help us keep this thing afloat and going, and keep it, this beautiful show, on the road. by going to kzfr.org and pledging today, or call in 601-340-KZFR. That's 601-340-5937. Every single donation is critically needed and greatly appreciated. And now, for the finale of this third Sapien session, here is Melody Prepstool's three questions and a proverb.
I guess the questions would be, who am I hoping to impact today or with this action? Why is it